raid a Palestinian refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. Countries scrambling to evacuate their citizens from Sudan. And Russia urges Armenia and Azerbaijan to comply with a 2020 ceasefire agreement.
Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi.
Israeli forces kill yet another Palestinian in their latest raid in the occupied West Bank. The young man identified as Soleiman Ayish died shortly after regime troopers shot him during a raid on a refugee camp in the city of Ariha. The incursion also left several other Palestinians injured. Israeli forces surrounded the refugee camp and began shooting at Palestinians early on Monday. The violence triggered armed clashes with local Palestinians. Israeli forces have killed at least 100 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank so far this year. Now, Israeli police say three people have been hit in a car ramming attack near a busy market in Al-Quds. They claim the driver of the car was neutralized on the spot. According to Israeli media, one of the injured, a 50-year-old man, is in serious condition. Our correspondent in the West Bank, Mona Kandel, is standing by live to give us more details. Mona.
The Israeli military claimed that a Palestinian was driving his vehicle and he had rammed his vehicle into a number of Israelis in the downtown of Al-Quds, wounding at least five people. At least one of them is in serious condition. It's not clear up till the moment if it was an accident or an anti-Israeli operation, because at the end of the day, every time the driver is discovered to be a Palestinian, the Israelis immediately, without investigating the issue, say that it's an anti-Israeli operation. So the Israeli military just issued a statement say that they suspect it's an anti-Israeli operation, because this Palestinian man from 39-year-old from the town of Beit Safafa in Al-Quds, he was married and a father of five, and he was not known by the Israelis to have any security file or to be involved in any attacks or a member of the Palestinian groups or even an activist. But the Israelis claim that he is from Beit Safafa, and initially they said it's an Israeli operation. Immediately, one of the Israelis at the scene used his gun, opened fire at the driver, and killed him immediately at the spot.
Thank you very much. Our correspondent, Mona Kandel, joining us live from Ramallah. Now, moving on, the British government has announced new sanctions against the Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Foreign Secretary James Cleverly says the restrictions include travel bans and asset freezes on the IRGC in its entirety and for individuals. Cleverly says the sanctions are in coordination with the United States and the European Union without giving further details. The UK and its Western allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions on the IRGC over alleged human rights violations. Tehran has repeatedly warned about the consequences of such hostile measures and has responded with its own sanctions on the UK and the EU. Iran has categorically dismissed U.S. accusations about the country's destabilizing role in the region. Tehran says Washington seeks to create Iranophobia and division in the region. We took a closer look at this issue in our news review program. Let's take a listen. Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, Tehran has reacted angrily to recent anti-Iran comments by the top American diplomat, and it says that Washington is once again fueling Iranophobia and division in the region. Foreign Ministry spokesman was referring to Antony Blinken, who accused Iran of destabilizing behavior and said that the U.S. remains committed to disrupting Iran's military procurement activities. Nasser Kanani called the U.S. State Secretary's remarks provocative, adding that their sole purpose is to create discord in the region in order to sell American weapons. He noted that Iran's military program is purely for defensive purposes. Kanani also underlined that Iran had always been in favor of regional security dialogue, and that is what led to what he called a recent positive cooperation, including with Saudi Arabia. He said that it is a wrong policy of the U.S. that brought insecurity and wars to the region. To discuss that further, we're joined by Mohammad Ali Araki, journalist and political analyst from London. Also, we have with us John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst from Belgrade. Thanks to both of you gentlemen for joining us on this edition of the News Review. Let's begin with Mr. Araki. Well, you heard the comments from Antony Blinken. Were you shocked to hear these comments? Let's consider also the timing, the rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran.
Yes, so in terms of being shocked, no, I'm not shocked, because that's the job of America, to say provocative words, to cause friction in the region, to try to cause friction in the region. The United States of America no longer has the previous position that they had to cause the trouble and friction that they used to cause once upon a time in Western Asia. And also, I'd like to mention that the United States, they accused Iran of interference and all the other accusations that they recently made. I'd like to make something clear over here, and that is the fact that it is the United States of America that has had constant interference in Asia, especially Western Asia.
Mr. Bosnich, the foreign ministry spokesman, Nasser Kanani, did not mince his words. He said that the U.S. is basically trying to create discord in the region in order to sell American weapons. How much do you agree?
I couldn't agree more. As a Canadian citizen, I can tell you that America has a primary incentive to sell weapons to drive its own economy, which is not competing properly on the world scale. America is losing its economic power to China, and America's compensation for that is to push further and bigger wars around the world. They are not just doing this against Iran, they are doing this in Ukraine, pumping hundreds of billions of dollars in weapons into the region, for which they will indebt the Ukrainian people for generations.
In terms of the relations between Iran and Saudi Arabia, and basically Iran and the countries in the region, how much do you think such comments by Antony Blinken would actually be effective?
The comment by Antony Blinken, technically, it would cause a minor fear in those countries, because they're becoming brave now. They're realizing that they are understanding, and America is starting to realize that any decision, any action they wish to take in Western Asia, they have to involve Iran. What I mean by this is they have to seek the advice. Iran has to know. If Iran does not accept it, that will not go forward. As an example, you can witness the situation in Yemen. Okay, why did the war end? So that's as a result of a crime happening there, people being killed, and so then it went down towards the war being ended. So this will cause a minor fear in the region, in the heart of those countries. But generally, I believe that we're going on a very positive direction. And this direction is the United States of America, as other leaders of resistance said, they'd have to close their suitcases and they'd have to leave the region. So at the start, some may fear, there may be different reactions from other countries, but hopefully I'm positive about this. It will not stop relations being fixed, and we'll hopefully have a peaceful Middle East very soon, hopefully.
So Mr. Bosnich, Mr. Araki believes that the countries in the region are more vigilant now than before. And basically, in your opinion, let's look at this entire situation in light of the rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and of course, the reopening of embassies, closer relations, obviously economic relations are also on top of the agenda. How do you see this entire situation unfold?
The idea that they can no longer play Saudi Arabia against Iran is going to rob the U.S. economy of billions and billions of dollars. And the important role played here in on the part of China to bring the two parties to the table and to begin the rapprochement has directly impacted the economy of the United States. The United States has come to the point where it is no longer competitive in the production business. China is outpacing them, outperforming them, and doing so at a much, much lower cost. Now we're going to see the collapse of the American military weapons-based business in the area. The only current major buyer is Israel, and that is the one last problem that has to be stopped in the region, and that is the American provocation of aggression on the part of Israel.
And do you agree with Mr. Araki that the countries in the region are more vigilant now?
Evident to me here in Europe, and certainly evident to my colleagues who are still in Washington, where I worked in the past.
Thank you very much, Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us live from Belgrade. Mohammad Ali Araki, journalist and political analyst from London. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. And countries from around the world are rushing to evacuate their citizens from Sudan as fighting continues between the army and a paramilitary force. France and Germany said that they have jointly evacuated around 700 people. The U.S., Russia, and China have also been pulling their nationals out. Some foreign nationals were flown out of the capital, Khartoum, while others sailed off from the port of Sudan in the Red Sea. At least two convoys involved in the evacuations have come under attack. One was carrying Qatari embassy staff and the other French citizens, one of whom was injured. The EU foreign policy chief says that he is in touch with the warring sides in Sudan and will push for a political settlement in the African country.
And now the ceasefire has stopped, it's over. We have to continue pushing for a political settlement. We cannot afford that Sudan, which is a very populated country, implodes because it will be sending shockwaves around the whole Africa.
Violence erupted between the military and the well-armed Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group in mid-April. It came after weeks of tensions over the proposed integration of the RSF into the military. The two warring factions were former allies and had jointly seized power in a 2021 coup. The clashes have so far killed nearly 430 people, triggering a humanitarian crisis. The violence has raised the risk of a wider conflict that could draw in outside powers. Now moving on, Russia urges Armenia and Azerbaijan to comply with a 2020 ceasefire agreement. This comes after tensions between the two neighbors flared in the weekend over a border on the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region. Moscow is expressing serious concern about the fresh hostilities, saying it is working on talks between Baku and Yerevan. On Sunday, Azerbaijan established a checkpoint on the only land route connecting Armenia with the Armenian-majority Karabakh. That prompted a deadly shootout between the two sides. Yerevan says that the checkpoint violates the 2020 ceasefire agreement that hands the control of the road known as the Lachin Corridor to Russian peacekeepers. Nagorno-Karabakh is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan. The country took control of key parts of the territory in the 2020 war after it broke away from Azerbaijan in the early 1990s. And Russia's Black Sea Fleet has repelled a drone attack on its vessels in the port of Sevastopol in Crimea. Crimea's government says that the attack on the Black Sea Fleet took place in the early hours of Monday and left no damage. It says that forces destroyed one of the surface drones and a second one exploded on its own. Russian media say passenger transportation has been suspended in Sevastopol. Moscow says Ukraine carried out the attack with the help of the UK. Kiev almost never claims responsibility for drone operations and bombings against targets inside Russia or a territory it controls. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014. And China has told Australia to stop citing Beijing as a threat in order to boost its military strength.
What I want to emphasize is that China has always pursued a defensive national defense policy. We're committed to maintaining peace and stability in the Asia-Pacific and the world, and we do not pose a threat to any country. We hope that some countries would stop using China as an excuse to boost their military and do not hype up baseless Chinese threat theory.
The remarks come after Australia said that an intense power competition between the U.S. and China has a potential for conflict in the Indo-Pacific region. Australia unveiled its biggest defense reform in decades in a document on Monday. Canberra is reportedly shifting its focus to long-range strike capabilities and indigenous munitions. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says that the aim was to make the country more self-reliant, prepared, and secure. The document also calls for greater security integration with Australia's partners, including the U.S. and the U.K. And South Koreans have been protesting against a U.K. missile base south of the capital, Seoul. They want the base and U.S. troops gone as tensions grow with the North Korean. And Frank Smith has more details.
Peace activists and local leaders in South Korea opposed to a U.S. anti-ballistic missile base have been demonstrating outside the presidential office in Seoul. The system known as Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, was deployed in early 2017. U.S. officials say it protects against missiles fired from North Korea. Local residents argue it generates warlike tension and want it removed. Anti-THAAD protesters have held a rally near the base in Songju, 250 kilometers south of Seoul. The government has indicated it would make the base permanent, and President Yoon Suk-yeol has suggested the country may get a second THAAD system. These villagers recognize that hosting a missile base makes their home a prime first target, not only for North Korea, but also for China, as THAAD's radar reaches in to Chinese territory. The THAAD base occupies a former mountain golf course and is near a Won Buddhist temple, whose monks also oppose the missile base. Protests have disturbed the operation of the base with occasional blockades, as recent U.S.-South Korea military discussions suggested routine and unfettered access had been lacking. Frank Smith, Songju, South Korea.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The bloc of developing countries will have a larger share of global growth than the group of seven major economies. According to figures and statistics, BRICS is going to pass West in economic might. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Bloomberg noted the BRICS group, including Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, is expected to increase their share of the global economy to nearly 35% by 2028. According to the outlet's calculations based on the latest IMF data, this year, 2023, the BRICS countries will contribute 32.1% of the world's growth compared to the G7, 29.9%. The group of seven nations, G7, consisting of the US, the UK, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan, is considered the most advanced economic bloc of countries on the planet. The report indicated that in 2020, the contribution of the BRICS countries and the G7 to global economic growth was equal. And from that moment on, the performance of the Western countries has been declining. By 2028, the G7's contribution to the world economy is predicted to decrease to 27.8%. Bloomberg calculations show that China will be the top contributor to global growth over the next 5 years, with its share set to be double that of the U.S. China's share of global GDP expansion is expected to represent 22.6% of total world growth by 2028, the outlet wrote. India is projected to contribute 12.9% of global GDP. Bloomberg wrote, in total, 75% of global growth is expected to be concentrated in 20 countries and over half in the top four: China, India, the US, and Indonesia. While Group of Seven countries will comprise a smaller share, Germany, Japan, the UK, and France are seen among the top 10 contributors. A recent study by a UK-based macroeconomics research has also found that the gap between the two groups in terms of global economic weight is expected to continue to grow. The analysts noted that China and India have been experiencing robust economic growth, and more countries are interested in joining BRICS. Earlier this year, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that more than a dozen nations have expressed interest in joining BRICS, including Algeria, Argentina, Bahrain, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Iran, Egypt, Mexico, Nigeria, Pakistan, Sudan, Syria, Turkey, the UAE, and Venezuela. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Bangladesh have acquired equity in the New Development Bank, the funding organization of BRICS. Last year, BRICS countries proposed the creation of their own currency in order to move away from the US dollar and the euro in mutual transactions. Meanwhile, according to France 24, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva criticized the outsized role of the US dollar in the world economy and lashed out at the IMF during an official visit to China. The veteran leftist, whose government recently announced a deal with Beijing to trade in their own currencies, ditching the dollar as an intermediary, is in China to boost ties with his country's top trading partner and spread his message that Brazil is back as a key player on the global stage. Lula said in Shanghai at a ceremony to inaugurate his political ally Dilma Rousseff as president of the development bank set up by the BRICS nations, said, "Why should every country have to be tied to the dollar for trade? Who decided the dollar would be the world's currency? Why can't a bank like the BRICS Bank have a currency to finance trade between Brazil and China? between Brazil and other BRICS countries. Today, countries have to chase after dollars to export, when they could be exporting in their own currencies. Lula also had strong words for the International Monetary Fund, alluding to accusations to IMF forces overly harsh spending cuts on cash-strapped countries like Brazil's neighbor Argentina in exchange for bailout loans. He said no bank should be asphyxiating countries' economics the way the IMF is doing now with Argentina, or the way they did with Brazil for a long time and every third world country. No leader can work with a knife to their throat because their country owes money.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن ملکون
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allah, ya Allah, subhanallah. Allah, ya Allah, walhamdulillah.
Imam Khomeini once said that the youth can better engage in self-purification as they have proximity to the divine abode. Imam also said in one of his historic addresses stressed as following, You young educated people, with whatever mission you have been assigned with, have grave responsibilities. Defending Islam is an obligation of each Muslim, and shielding the independence and sovereignty of the nation is also among key Islamic duties. Youth must undertake serious efforts in order to introduce the genuine divine religion of Islam from the various perspectives, including its governance and justice capacities to the human societies.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Welcome to the Spring of the Truth from Arab English Radio. Today we're again with you with another statement of the late leader of the Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. Imam Khomeini in a statement said that it was like this in Islam from the very beginning, that the ruler or the leader of the Islamic Ummah who was at the top of the government in his life, he was with people, with ordinary people. And he was a person who was living a life the same as the other lives of the people, or even lower the life of the ordinary people. So in continuation of the characteristics of Islamic leader, here again, Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, talks about a governor, or let's say a leader, who is supposed to lead the Islamic government or the Islamic system. He has to live like ordinary people. As we said, the leader should be at the same state and the same level of the people, or even lower than them. It's nice to know that even in the recommendations of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, we say that the one who has more responsibilities, he is the one who needs to be paid more. Imam says that the one who has more responsibility, he's the one that who has to be paid less. But the person who is at the level of management, he has a sort of rights or certain, let's say, payments just due to the position that he has taken. But in an Islamic system, the one who is more responsible, the person who has more responsibility, should be paid less than the other staff and other workers of the organization. Because a person who feels that his management is needed is the one who has to sacrifice himself when he has prepared himself to sacrifice because he has, let's say, a talent. This is on him to be expecting something even less than what is being given to the others. I think it's an interesting model that we need to think and ponder. That's why we see that in an Islamic model, no one is competing to take the position from the other. Because in Islamic system, people are usually selected and elected based on their understanding and recognition of the duty that they have on their shoulders.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The soaring inflation rate in the United States and Europe was triggered by the war in Ukraine that broke out last year. Wall Street's top strategist expects the U.S. economy to enter recession by the middle of this year, with corporate profits falling and unemployment rising. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Agence France-Presse has covered this story and tells us more. A new survey citing economists has predicted the United States is poised to enter recession this year and face high inflation well into 2024. More than two-thirds of respondents to the National Association for Business Economics survey saw inflation remaining above 4% in the United States at the end of the year. The organization said in a statement the survey summarized the responses of 217 National Association of Business Economics members and was conducted between 2nd to 10th of March. It comes as the U.S. Federal Reserve has raised interest rates by 4.75 percentage points in a bid to tackle soaring inflation in the country, which touched a record level last year amid the collapse of several major American banks. Silvergate Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and First Republic Bank all crashed within a couple of weeks, plunging the financial markets into turmoil. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said on Thursday, 23rd of March, that the government used tools to act quickly to prevent contagion and was prepared to take additional actions if warranted amid the banking crisis. Janet Yellen claimed, "Our top priority is to protect the health of the U.S. economy. 2 weeks ago, we learned of problems at two banks, and that could have significant impacts on the broader banking system and the American economy. We took action to protect all depositors at the two failed institutions and provide additional liquidity for banks. This was designed to mitigate risks to the banking sector. Janet Yellen further noted that the owners and shareholders of the failed banks are not being protected by the government, and the losses due to the collapse of the banks would not be covered using taxpayers' money. The recent quarter of a percentage point rise in the interest rates by the Federal Reserve's ninth consecutive rate rise and the highest rate since 2007. Just a year ago, interest rates were close to zero. Meanwhile, international markets have been closely watching the U.S. Federal Reserve's moves and mounting stress in the U.S. banking sector. On Wednesday, 22nd of March, European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde warned that financial tensions in the wake of the banking crisis may hit the eurozone. Christine Lagarde warned, "Inflation is still high and uncertainty around its path ahead has increased. This makes a robust strategy going forward essential." Recently, the European Central Bank decided to raise its interest rate by a further 50 basis points, shrugging off the turmoil in the banking markets. The Bank of England has increased its interest rate repeatedly in the last 2 years, raising it 11 times to 4.25 percentage points now. The Bank of England says the increase in interest rate is part of the British government's measures to curb inflation that hit its highest levels since 1982. According to some economists, the rise in interest rates will inevitably increase pressure on many Britons already being squeezed by soaring inflation and the worsening cost of living crisis that is expected to continue until 2028. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a new survey, the public's trust in the U.S. banking industry sharply dropped in the aftermath of the collapse of four prominent banks recently and their effects on the market. An opinion poll released recently found only 10% of respondents said they have a great deal of confidence in U.S. banking and financial institutions. That's down from 22% who said they did in a 2020 opinion poll. Almost 60% of respondents said in the recent poll that they had only some confidence in banking, while 30% said they had hardly any confidence. In a breakdown of responses from various industries included in the survey, only Congress had a lower percentage say they have a great deal of confidence in the institution. The lack of trust in banking was bipartisan, as only 10% of Democrats and 8% of Republicans said they have a great deal of confidence in the banking sector. Silicon Valley Bank collapsed recently after it did not have enough cash on hand to fulfill withdrawal requests and needed to sell assets, leading to a bank run. Signature Bank, which focuses on cryptocurrency, and also two other banks crashed just a few days later. The federal government stepped in to protect all deposits from customers, even if an account surpasses the $250,000 limit that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation protects to try to calm customers in the market. The country's largest banks also bailed out First Republic Bank, which is based in San Francisco, California, to the tune of $30 billion, as many of its depositors moved their money to larger institutions. Pollsters also found bipartisan agreement that government regulation of financial institutions is inadequate. Just more than half of Republicans said so, and 63% of Democrats agreed. Only 15% of all respondents said government regulations is too much. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. According to a new survey, less than 30% of the American public are confident that they can keep up with their expenses as inflation continues to impact the U.S. economy. The results of an opinion poll conducted by the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research at the University of Chicago and released on Friday, 24th of March, showed that only 29% of adults said they're extremely or very confident that they can keep up with expenses, marking a drop from the 45% who said so as inflation began to take effect in October of 2021. Pollsters also found that the percentage of adults who are confident they could find a job if they wanted to fell from 36% to 26%, and those who are confident they could afford to pay an unexpected medical expense fell from 33% to 23%. About 40% of respondents said they are somewhat confident they can keep up with the expenses, while 29% said they're not very or not at all confident. About three-quarters of respondents said their household expenses are higher than they were a year ago, while a third said their debt now is higher. Almost half said their household savings were lower compared to a year ago. Still, just more than a third said their personal finances majorly contribute to their stress levels, while half said they minorly contribute. A little more than a half also said they consider their financial situation to be good. The results come as inflation remains high in the United States. The U.S. Federal Reserve has aggressively raised interest rates as part of its attempts to lower inflation under its target of 2%. But some economic experts and politicians have expressed concerns that the U.S. Federal Reserve's moves could cause an economic downturn.
Ocean of Dua. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we will be with you with the explanation of Dua ul-Kumail, the commentary of different parts of this Kumail supplication by the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam. We'll be back after you listen to the parts we're going to discuss. Allahumma wa man aradani bisu'in fa'arid wa man kadani fakid waj'alni min ahsani abidika nasiban indak وأقربهم منزلة منك وأخصهم زلفة لديك فإنه لا ينال ذلك إلا بفضلك. Brothers and sisters, we have reached this excerpt of the Divine Kumail supplication. Allahumma ومن أرادني بسوء فأريد. O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desire it for him. وَمَنْ كَادَنِي فَكِدْهِ And whoever deceives me, deceive him. وَجْعَلْنِي مِنْ أَحْسَنِ عَبِيدِكَ نَصِيبًا عِنْدَكَ Make me one of the most excellent of your slaves who share the best reward from you. وَأَقْرَبِهِمْ مَنْزِلَةً مِنْكَ The nearest of them in station to you. وَأَخَسِّهِمْ زُلْفَةً لَدَيْكَ And the most elect of them in proximity to you. فإنه لا ينال ذلك إلا بفضلك. For that cannot be attained except by your bounty. We have discussed so far about the great ocean of bounty and mercy of the Almighty Allah, the generosity of the Almighty Allah. And regarding that, this part continues, وَجُدْ لِي بِجُودِكَ وَعْتِفْ عَلَيَّ بِمَجْدِكَ. Grant generously to me through your munificence. Incline toward me with your splendor, وَحْفَظْنِي بِرَحْمَتِكَ. And protect me with your mercy. This great ocean of mercy of the Almighty Allah is what is saving us all from the tribulation and chastisement of the hereafter. Now, in this part, we read, وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي بِسُوءٍ فَأَرِدْهِ. O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desire it for him. The enemies that actually desire evil for human beings are different. Some of them are Satans. We have satanic temptations. And in the Holy Quran, we have different instances of it. Also, the carnal soul of every human being. And an evil friend, maybe. Some of us have friends that do not want good for us. They desire evil for us. So, we ask the Almighty Allah in this part, وَمَنْ أَرَادَنِي بِسُوءٍ فَأَرِدْهِ وَمَنْ كَادَنِي فَكِدْهِ. O Allah, whoever desires evil for me, desire it for him, and whoever deceives me, deceive him.
My limbs for your service and sustain the strength of my hands to preserve in your service and bestow upon me the eagerness to fear you and constantly serve you so that I may lead myself towards you in the field with the vanguards who are in the fore rank and be swift towards you amongst those who hasten towards you and urge eagerly to be near you and draw myself towards you like those who sincerely draw themselves towards you and to fear you like the fear of those who believe firmly in you and that I may join the congregation of the faithful congregated near you.
Thank you, Allah,
now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, feeling the peace all around, seeing things we could never imagine, hearing the sound of rivers flow, and we know we'll be here forever, the feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
So the temptation and deceiving power of these dangerous enemies is so strong. Those enemies are Satan, carnal soul, and evil friends. They are so dangerous that even Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salam seeks Allah's assistance for fighting them. Allahumma wa man aradani bisu'in farid. O Allah, who desires evil for me, desire it for him. Previously, regarding the different parts of the Divine Kumail supplication, we have had detailed discussions on Satan, the carnal soul, and the evil friends in this version of the program. Anyway, if one wants to be the most excellent, the nearest, the most elevated servant of Allah, he should have faith together with certainty
and acceptable sincerity, valuable deeds, righteous morality, especially piety to keep him from wrongdoing. And it is exactly what the Holy Quran states, إِنَّ أَكْرَمَكُمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ أَتْقَاكُمْ. Surely, the most honorable of you with Allah is the one among you most pious. So piety is the base of human prosperity in this world and the last day. And it has three different stages: general, special, and the most special. The general piety is doing the obligatory deeds and avoiding unlawful ones. The special piety is avoiding undesirable deeds as well as the permissible deeds to the greatest extent possible. And finally, the most special piety is avoiding anything that prevents the heart from Allah's remembrance. And I assume we have had detailed discussion over this issue. Let us end this episode with a great story cited in one of the historical books. It is cited in the books of history about the life of Khaja Nizamul Mulk that one day he met a pious servant of Allah. He told the pious man, "Ask me something so that I may give it to you, because you are in need and I am needless." The pious man said, "I want Allah and nothing except Him, because asking from anyone except Allah will be below my standards. How can I ask this from you then?" And Khaja Nizamul Mulk said, "If you do not ask me anything, let me ask you something." The pious man said, "What is it?" And he replied, "When you remember Allah in your prayers, remember me too." The pious man said, "When I have the blessing of remembering Allah, I forget my own self. How can I remember you?" فَإِنَّهُ لَا يُنَالُ ذَٰلِكَ إِلَّا بِفَضْلِكَ. We ask the Almighty Allah, we ask from His bounty to help us remember Him much. Thank you for staying with us, dear listeners. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.